When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Basically, when they start shooting at each other, it's like the pilot has a pistol or a rifle and is like taking a shot.
He's whipping out the gun and like doing a drive-by.
Yeah.
Shooting, yeah.
Welcome back to the Random Theory Podcast. I'm Grace.
And I'm Josh.
And together we host a science-ish podcast. You know,
it's science adjacent.
Yeah. You know how it is. How you been, Josh?
You know, I've been good. Just always busy, but yeah, it's all good. Good things. The band was back in the studio.
How'd it go?
It went great, actually. We were only booked for like 4 hours, and we were trying to get two songs done. And we thought like, well, there's no way we'll finish two songs. But then our engineer was like, when we got there, she was like, so you guys are only booked until 2 p.m? And I was like, yeah, that was, I guess, all you had. And she's like, oh, well, no one has the studio after you. Like, no one's booked and I'm not booked.
Weird.
So if you guys want to just stay. So we stayed quite a bit longer, got a lot done.
Nice.
We're going back this Saturday.
Fun.
To finish up, just tighten things up and do the mixing. We're not releasing new songs yet, although we have plans for that. We've already got like a roadmap going of we're gonna put out some actually brand new songs. But these are gonna be, we're putting out 2, possibly 3 acoustic versions of songs from like the most popular songs from our album.
Oh, fun. That'll be cool.
My big thing was like, okay, I'll do it. But I don't want them to sound like every other acoustic, you know, just like an acoustic guitar. You know, I was like, I want them to feel unique and like interesting.
Yeah.
And I think they do. It almost feels like its own song. Like it's still Ghost Story, but it's just unique. You know, I played a freaking mandolin in it, which was cool. Yeah. So
that's pretty neat.
Those will be coming out in the next couple months over the course. I think we want to try and get one out in August, but we'll see.
That's so
exciting. How about you? What's you got going?
It's all good. I re-downloaded Pokemon Go.
Oh, okay. Okay.
25 playing Pokemon Go in the city of New York. Kind of fun. I'm not
of all the
lie.
Things you could have said to me, I don't know if that was one I would have expected, but
yeah,
you know,
I know. I feel
I'm here
like
for it.
Kind of out of left field for me, but yeah, I'm playing Pokemon Go again.
Right on.
You know, you go through phases and it's just kind of like, I don't know. You're like, oh, hey, I'm going to re-download this game again and like play Pokemon Go. And I don't know. It's kind of
fun. I do that all the time.
Yeah. So I'm doing that right now, getting my steps in, going for walks, hatching eggs, you know.
Now I feel like I got to re-download it.
Listen. I think it's a lot more fun when you live in a city. So like when you live kind of in rural areas, it's a little bit weirder, I feel like. But living in the city, it's really fun because, you know, it has all these different marks and you can go visit them and like spin these different wheels or like the power ups, so you get way more power ups. Like literally sitting on my couch, I'm in like a hot spot. And so I'm like in between like 3 different like points where it's like tons of Pokemon are. And so it's just a lot of fun. I don't know. I'm just doing my own little thing. It's taking me on some fun adventures. They now have this like walking feature where you can go on like paths that like people have created and stuff. They basically call it like Pokemon Go Adventures or something, but it's really fun.
You sold me on it. I got to re-download it. I haven't played it in when did it come out? That was the last time I played it. So
playing in the city is way more fun. I've already caught Pikachu. I've been playing for 48 hours. And so yeah, it's been good. If you live in a city, you should definitely re-download Pokemon Go because
it's a little bit more engaging. A city. It's smaller than New York, but it is a city. So I probably should at least see what the Pokemon Go scene is.
Yeah, here. Check it out. It's a good time.
I gotta know. Yeah. What's your like your go-to? Your I don't even what's it called? You have like a starter, your Pokemon, your
Oh, I have an Eevee and I love her.
Oh, okay, for sure. Yeah.
I've always been an Eevee girl. Eevee's always been like my go-to. I also have my phone's charging right now so I can go for a walk after we podcast. When did we learn that Pikachu evolves? Was that like a thing in the Pokemon series where it's like Pikachu evolved?
You learned that it evolves, and then what's the main guy? Like Ash, I think is the,
dude
that has, he just like forces Pikachu to never evolve. And so he's always Pikachu instead of turning into Raichu. It, Pokemon fans out there, don't come at me. I don't, I'm sorry. I've never.
Man, he really held Pikachu back from his full.
I know. He clipped his wings.
Oh my gosh. But... Have you ever collected a Pichu?
A Pichu? No.
It's Pikachu before he becomes Pikachu.
Oh, I didn't know there was... I thought Pikachu was
It is
the,
so cute. It's cuter than Pikachu. But yeah, Pokemon Go, that has been my work and my passion.
You're out getting exercise. Like, you're walking around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's one of your passions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're all good on all fronts. Like, you're getting your enjoyable gaming experience, but also like getting out, getting active,
yeah,
all that stuff. Like it's a win-win.
It is a win-win. Fun fact, I loved Pokemon growing up, like the TV show.
Really?
The card game never made like sense to me. Like I just never got into the card game. But Pokemon Go, like if it was on TV, I was gonna stop and watch. Or just Pokemon, not Pokemon Go, but like Pokemon in general. Yeah. Like when it was on TV, I was gonna stop and watch. Was very invested. Yeah.
Catch them all.
My sister's had it on her phone for like since it came out. She's just never deleted it.
She's never deleted it?
No, she...
You know what? Speaking of not ever deleting something.
Do you have Flappy Bird?
I have Flappy Bird.
Shut up.
Still, I can't. It's not focusing on my camera. Sorry. But I have the original. I never deleted it. You can't play it. If I open it, nothing happens. But I have the I have Flappy Bird.
What happened to Flappy Bird?
It was the creator of it. Was just like it got too famous and he was like didn't want it and was scared and so he decided to pull the app down because it was just like too big.
It was literally the best app in the whole entire world. Flappy Bird was so good.
All right, that was the gaming corner.
Yeah, sorry.
Should we get into some ratings and reviews?
Yeah, absolutely. What do you have for today?
Just a short and simple one, but I wanted to read it because we always talk about like, hey, you can just reach out and say, hey, you don't have to have like a podcast topic or anything. So this is coming from Justin.
Hey, Justin.
And just says, this is my first email I ever wrote. Just wanted to say hi, like your podcast, bye. Fantastic.
Justin is straight to the point.
Yeah, no waste of time with that one.
No waste of time. I'm glad your first email ever was to us. Thank you for sending us an email. That's so cool.
That's huge. That's huge, Justin.
We appreciate it. Thanks, Justin. Hey, hi. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Glad you like the podcast. Thank you for writing in.
Yeah.
It was a super efficient email. So love that.
Love when it's straight to the point.
That's totally fine. If you don't have a podcast topic, but you want to write in, say hi, write in, say hi. That's great.
Or if like we talk about something and you're like, oh, I want to weigh in on this. Like, let us know like your thoughts on Pokemon Go and all that good stuff.
What do you got from Apple Podcasts?
From Apple Podcast. Wow. Don't know where that came from. This is from T-Man 121397. He's not a stranger here. They said podcast idea and a joke. They gave us 5 stars. Thank you very much. They said, I'm back. I love this podcast. It's part of my Monday morning. Since my last podcast idea about cars was great, here's another one. What is the evolution of planes and their effects on World War I and World War II? And a joke. What does the hammer say to its friends?
What?
Nailed it. Classic dad joke.
That is a classic dad joke right there.
Yes.
Love it.
So T-Man, thank you for writing in again. The Cars podcast ended up being a huge hit. How to Cars Car. Yeah. If you haven't listened to it, make sure you go and listen to it. Literally all you have to search is How to Cars Car. And this is Planes.
Planes.
And World War I and World War II.
Didn't we do a podcast on flight? Like just basic planes?
Yeah, like how does a plane fly? Yep.
It was just like just the basics. But this is more of like history-wise and what it did.
Yeah, how they've evolved and how the science changed.
Right. Okay.
All right. Let's hop into how hot air balloons were basically the first airplane right after this commercial.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So hot air balloons actually have been deployed by the military for more than a century to get a bird's eye view of the battlefield. So this happened during like the Civil War, but the fixed wing airplanes of World War I were able to fly deep behind enemy lines and to track troop movement and map the terrain.
Have you ever been in a hot air balloon?
No, it's on my bucket list.
In the area where I grew up, it's not in the exact town, but it's in the area. There is, every year they do...
Festival,
yeah.
I love that.
So they have like, they shut down the main street of this little town and have a ton of hot air balloon people come and like set up their balloons and light them at night.
We had one of those in my hometown too.
Really?
Yeah, it's like the biggest one on the East Coast.
Oh, nice. Yeah. See, so how, if both of us had that in our upbringing, how have we never... managed to be in one? I don't know.
I have no idea, honestly. But yeah, I think it's really interesting that they would use hot air balloons to basically get a map of like,
yeah,
what was happening in the air, or what, not what was happening in the air, but like what was happening behind enemy lines. Right. And you know what I think is really interesting is that planes have a very interesting strategy in World War One. They become more impactful in World War Two, but in World War One, they were used for mapping. Like they would take people up to draw pictures.
Oh, interesting.
Basically of like the battlefield and what it looked like and where their enemies were and like where they were moving and like that kind of stuff. At the start of the First World War, isn't that so crazy that we've had like two world wars? I don't know. To me, that's just like really crazy to think about. So at the start of the First World War, aircrafts like the BE-2, which basically just looks like kind of like the Wright brothers plane, but like
it's a biplane. It's got two wing, double stack wing.
These were primarily used for reconnaissance.
That's like what you were saying about like surveying the land.
Recon. Due to the static nature of trench warfare, aircrafts were the only means for getting information beyond enemy trenches. So they were essential for discovering where the enemy was based and what they were doing. Digging a trench takes a minute, y'all.
Sure.
So at the start of World War One, reconnaissance planes were such a novelty that enemy pilots would literally wave at each other as they crisscrossed the front lines.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So like they would just be up there in the air and just be like, hey.
Well, I assume because they were just for reconnaissance.
Yeah. There's no harm, no foul up there.
They weren't. Yeah. They're not up there like shooting each other. So it's just, they're all just chilling.
Yeah.
Taking in the land.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But it wasn't long before the strategic importance of spy planes snuck in. And then there was a burning desire to shoot the enemy aircraft out of the sky.
What
a turntable of turntables, you know.
How the turntables right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So these early aircrafts, they weren't fitted with radio sets, but messages about enemy troop movement needed to be communicated quickly. So pilots would either drop messages in weighted bags or use message streamers to drop messages to the forces on the ground, which is interesting.
Wow. So a plane would fly over and just like throw a potato sack out.
Basically, yeah.
With like a note that said, hey, these guys are over here.
Yeah. They would like throw something down that had like a giant tail on it, essentially.
Right.
So that they could find it.
Which makes more. Yeah. I mean, that would be easier if it had like a big streamer.
Yeah. They were like red or yellow or blue. Yeah. And it was a way for them to communicate. So.
Okay.
Aerial recon or reconnaissance was actually a pretty dangerous job. So taking photos of the enemy position required the pilot to fly straight and level so that the observer could take a series of overlapping images. And this made them basically an easy target because they had to fly. Like these planes aren't like flying super high in the air. Like they're flying low and steady. And so this made them an easy target for the people on the ground to just like open fire on them.
if you think about photography at the time, I mean, you're not like nowadays, you can snap a photo in a second.
Yeah.
But back in the day, taking a picture was not a quick task. So, and so, yeah, I mean, they would have, it would have to be the most controlled flight, you know, can't move too much. Otherwise, the photo is just going to be a blurry mess.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that is interesting.
So like for a while it was fine. It was just kind of like, okay, hey. And then they were like, wait, why don't we just shoot these down?
Sure. Yeah.
And then it gets even crazier. So then you get air-to-air combat. So throughout 1916 and 1917, aerial warfare developed from lone fighting to ever larger formations of aircrafts and patrols. So patrol leaders would try to give themselves an element of surprise by positioning themselves above the enemy before attacking. And at this point, the formations would break up into individual dogfights, or air aces, as they would call them. And they were celebrated as heroes and used for propaganda by their governments, essentially.
Right on. Real quick, because it was just mentioned there, really great World War II movie is called 1917.
Mm.
And the whole movie is made to be like it's one continuous take. It obviously wasn't, but it looks like it is when you watch it. It is so good. It's fantastic.
I'll have to
it's
add
so
it to crazy. My list.
Yeah. Also, Dunkirk by Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, I think it's so crazy how like this evolved. So they went from basically like just collecting intel to flying above their enemy and like being in these formations. And now we're like killing people out of the sky. So in early skirmishes, slow moving recon planes would take pot shots at each other with service pistols and rifles. So keep in mind, like these planes aren't like these are little prop planes, if you will. These are not your giant like planes that we're going to get in World War II. We're still in World War I, where like basically when they start shooting at each other, it's like the pilot has a pistol or a rifle and is like taking a shot.
He's just whipping out the gun and like doing a drive-by.
Yeah.
Shooting, yeah.
So then ground crews started mounting machine guns on the front of the observer's position, but they were really hard to aim around the propeller, wing, and struts. Because, like, remember, you're basically in between. You're, like, sandwiched in between, like, two wings. And also, like, how are you going to shoot a machine gun through the propellers without the bullets ricocheting off and, like, hitting you?
Right. But they did do something to fix that.
They
right.
did. So there was this breakthrough invention that was called the interpreter gear or synchronization gear, which allowed the front mounted machine gun to fire a continuous barrage of bullets safely through the plane's rotating propeller blades. So all pilots had to do was aim the nose of the plane at the enemy and fire.
I mean, it also makes sense. I think there's a really good Slow-Mo Guys YouTube video where they demonstrate they have like a propeller and they shoot
a bullet through it.
And I think, I haven't watched it in a really long time, but I think it has this synchronization gear. So they show like literally the precision of the second that propeller moves and a space is open, a bullet goes through the open space.
It's so interesting to me. World War One was a very unique time for planes. We're going to talk about the pilots of World War One here in a second. But like World War One was unique in the fact that they were just figuring out that like you don't have to march up to one another like we did in the Civil War.
Right. It's that weird crossroad. Like it's literally it's the crossroads of old war. Like, like the let's all stand in a line with our cannons.
Yeah.
And then march into each other.
Yeah.
And then like new war where it's like we have all these tools and we're going to be really strategic and like we don't have to meet each other face to face and just like kill each other that way.
Yeah. And planes were basically the first step towards that.
Can you imagine being like, you know, thinking back like World War One, you know, people were drafted from all over. Can you imagine being some dude or whatever that grew up in like a rural part of the country, was not, didn't, you know, didn't have the news, the breaking news of like, oh, we invented a plane. And then they go to war and one of these things like flies over you and you're
insane.
Like,
insane. You're like, what is that? Like, it's not a bird. What is that? How is that flying?
Yeah, wait, this giant thing.
Like, it's crazy. And, like, the other thing that, like, I think about is that there was no pilot school. They were literally just throwing kids in these things, and they were like, figure out how to fly it.
Someone figure out what works best.
Yeah.
And that's totally true. I mean, the first couple, I mean, a lot of people died, I'm sure, because they had to.
World War One was weird in that way, where it was like everyone was just kind of figuring out, like, how do we do war now? How do we fight one another?
Right. What does war look like? And it's weird because I feel like, and I'm saying this like hypothetically, and I hope it never, ever happens, but I think we would be in the exact same place now because it has been so long, you know, since World War II. I mean, we've had things in the Middle East and whatever, but there's not been like a full scale war.
I think if we went to like a World War III, I think we're still too close to like the atomic age. Where there's like you have that whole conversation. So it's like, I think you're too close to the atomic age. And I also feel like we're in a place where, you know, the war doesn't have to necessarily be fought by humans.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, that's the thing is I think we're in a place now even more so where, you know, there might still be humans involved, but it's like we're even more removed from the humans on the front lines of a battlefield. Like everything can be even more planned and even more removed and, you know, planes, drones, all the stuff that you, it's just different.
It's very different. So for pilots, you had like the Red Baron, of course. He was like the very, very well-known one. His name was Manfred von Richthofen.
The Red Baron.
Yeah, he was born into an Persian family in 1892, served in the German army on the Western Front, and he transferred to the air service in 1915. And he became the highest scoring ace of the war with 80 official victories and was later given the command of the Flying Circus, which is a unit that's comprised of Germany's elite fighter pilots. And then he was unfortunately killed in action on April 1918. And then was buried with full military honor.
He's definitely the most well-known, you know, I feel like if you're like, name a pilot, it's the Red Baron.
Yeah, like I think about him and I think about like Charlie Brown, you know, where Snoopy sure. is like on...
Snoopy's the Red Baron?
Yeah, Snoopy's the Red Baron. Like that's immediately like the first thing that like comes to mind. And sure, I remember like asking my dad like who was the Red Baron one time and he was like... I really don't know. I know he was like a pilot, a fighter pilot, but
yeah, I think that's the number one. He was a German World War I fighter pilot,
which is crazy. Yeah. So for the first time, planes took to the air with express purpose of air to air combat. And the French began calling any pilot who shot down five or more enemy planes an ace or an ace. And while these aces had no shortage of skill and daring, the winners of most early dogfights were pilots flying in better technology.
Sure, which that makes sense. I mean, the better the plane, you're probably going to do better in a dogfight.
During the First World War, airplanes were developed to carry out specific functions. So fighter airplanes patrolled the skies, recon planes observed the enemy on the ground, and bomber airplanes attacked ground troops. And aerial darts were used by both sides to attack infantry and cavalry formations on the ground. And these metal darts were about 12 centimeters long, and they were usually dropped in bundles from airplanes as a method to ensure a wide dispersal. So not only were they shooting each other in the sky, they were literally dropping metal darts on one another.
Right.
Over enemy lines.
Right.
In these trenches where there's nowhere to run or hide.
Yeah. Pretty wild, to say the least.
Yeah. So now we roll into World War II.
Okay.
World War II rolls around and we go from these really slow airplanes that like can't do anything really in World War I besides, you know, you can throw things out of them. You might be able to fight each other a little bit and they're not very dynamic. They're not made to spiral and do these crazy tricks and like be maneuverable. So now in World War II, we have a single seat fighter airplane with machine guns on its wings for shooting down enemy aircrafts in the sky. Like, we have now mounted guns to airplanes.
Right. We built a plane with the sole purpose of doing one thing.
Yes.
And that's to shoot other planes.
Yeah. The Spitfire's design continued to be developed during the Second World War to make it faster and more powerful. And it became the most famous plane of the Second World War, particularly after its success in the Battle of Britain.
There is a whole character in Dunkirk that is flying a Spitfire plane.
Yeah.
During the entire movie. That's
it's a very iconic looking plane. It's what you imagine that they're flying.
Yeah. If you think of like old war plane.
Yeah.
You're thinking of a Spitfire probably.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's not a biplane like the old World War One things were. Yep. It's more aerodynamic. They can make more maneuvers and things like that to dodge and better position themselves for fighting.
Well, this is really interesting in World War II because we no longer have just like a set of planes. It's like there's a fighter aircraft, a bomber aircraft, a jet fighter, rockets. Like they broke everything down and gave everyone and everything a very specific job. So the B-29 was the super fortress and it was the largest Allied bomber of the Second World War. And it had a pressurized crew compartment, which this is really big. Like it had a pressurized crew compartment, which meant that the crew no longer had to endure sub-zero temperatures on long range bombing missions. This is actually important for you and I as passengers on planes.
Right.
If they had not figured out how to pressurize a crew compartment, we would not be able to fly long distances. We would all have to wear sub-zero suits flying on planes.
Yeah, because we would freeze.
Yeah.
on a long journey. Yeah, yeah.
So these super fortresses dropped the atomic bomb on the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That's like what they're very much known for.
Right. The B-29 was the go-to bomber plane.
Yep. And then you had your jet fighter planes in World War II. And the German Mi-262 was the world's first operational jet fighter. It was far faster than propeller-driven aircrafts and was capable of maximum speeds of 559 miles an hour.
Wow.
You have to, like, this is huge.
Yeah.
Like, this is huge. Having this advantage of a jet fighter, like, these are, like, if you think about, like, Top Gun. Like, that's kind of what these are.
Right. The beginnings of...
Oh, yes. Very much the beginnings. That was the world's first operational jet fighter, which is crazy. So, in April of 1944, the same month, the first British fighter aircraft... the Gloster Meteor became operational. Sure. And this technology meant that aircrafts could fly faster and higher than ever before.
So that was saying the Germans developed one first.
Yep.
But at the same time, British allies also developed a fighter aircraft.
Yeah. I mean, you have to at that point, right?
Well, sure. Yeah. If Germany has one, we got to have one too in World War II, obviously. Those were the two sides of the war.
They were. And I think it's like super interesting too, if you think about it, because you know how like when these planes crash, like say Germany had a plane, like a fighter jet crash in enemy territory.
Yeah.
They basically had crews go in and steal all the information on board. Like they still do that today where it's if something goes down in enemy territory, like there are people there to make sure all the information and like technology gets off. And I think that has to do in part because of, you know, like maybe the British weren't close, but all of a sudden like one of these fighter jets went down in British territory and it's like, oh, that's how they did it. Like you get all this like new information and technology. So I think it's just like really interesting in how this like all like works together.
Yeah. I mean, it is a big deal even still today, I'm sure. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a big deal if one of your planes goes down behind enemy lines, because at that point, the cat's out of the bag. You've lost whatever little, if you had some little advantage, well, now they know and they can reverse engineer it and make their own. So I think I feel like I've heard, and I don't have like 100 details on this or anything, but I feel like I've heard like when that happens, even still today, but back then, I mean, it was a priority to be like, oh, this plane crashed, get another plane in there to bomb the crap out of it so that they can't
steal the information.
So there's nothing left to recover, basically. Yep.
I think it, I mean, it's crazy because like you have these jet fighters, you have these bomber aircrafts, and like now we're specially training people. So you got a fighter aircraft and now we have rockets.
Rockets.
Which like we're not going to talk about like how also they ended up with an atomic bomb, but like rockets in the Second World War were actually huge. Like it wasn't just dropping bombs. It wasn't just doing X, Y, and Z. Like there were rockets that were like the first long range ballistic flying missiles.
Yeah.
It's which is crazy to think about. So it was the German V2 rocket. And it was the world's first long-range ballistic missile, which means flying missile. And it was armed with a one-ton warhead, which caused considerable loss of life and damage when detonated.
You want a sweet little fun fact about the German V2 rocket?
Yeah, tell us.
I might have mentioned this in a previous podcast that I did, but the engineer, the lead engineer for the German V2 rocket was a guy named Wernher von Braun. And after the war, he actually came to the United States and became the head engineer at NASA and was the lead rocket engineer for the Apollo moon missions.
Oh.
So, the guy that developed the German V2 rocket that was used by the Nazis in World War II.
That's crazy.
Went on to be a NASA head engineer for the Apollo moon missions. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the V2, it heralded both a new age of rockets and missile technology, and it basically started the arms race between the superpowers with both the Soviets and the US. And like you said, it used German scientists.
Those German scientists, and then everybody, obviously, once one of those superpowers has this tech, everyone's got to have it.
Yeah. Speaking of tech, World War II was so innovative with takeoffs and landings of planes. So developed in the 1960s, the Harrier was the first operational fixed wing aircraft to be capable of VTOL, which is vertical takeoff and landing.
VTOL.
And it was nicknamed the Jump Jet. And this plane literally takes off and lands going straight up in the air like a helicopter.
Right.
Doesn't need an airfield, can land in anywhere. It was mostly used on aircraft carriers like ships because, you know, taking off of ships was sketchy and scary.
So
this just made it safer. But I just think it's so insane, like vertical takeoff and landing. If you've ever watched a video, it's so wild. It looks like it shouldn't even make sense.
I mean, now there's the various like carrier, like giant carrier things that have the propellers that like spin up and down. But there's even like fighter jets that can VTOL now that'll like take off vertically and then switch and can fly, you know. So also like when you think about it, it totally makes sense. Like that's a great innovation that they don't need a giant runway to take off and land.
It's wild. And in World War II, aviation became a crucial weapon of modern warfare. The Battle of Britain to dropping atomic bombs on Japan, much of World War II was actually fought in the skies.
Right.
So the investment in aircraft technology during this time drove the aviation industry in general forward in leaps and bounds, paving the way for modern aircrafts used in passenger operations today. Like I talked about, like aircraft pressurization.
Yeah, that's huge. Huge innovation that we still use today that we, you know, everyone that flies in a plane utilizes.
Although there had been experimentation with pressurization prior to World War II, it wasn't until that demand of war really pushed the boundaries of technology and it came into its own. So in 1943, the Constellation, which was made by Lockheed, became the first widespread airliner with pressurized cabins. And that was followed by aircrafts like the DC-6 and DC-7, which laid the path for the cabins that we fly in today. So shout out to World War II for air travel, you know?
I mean, it's so weird. Like, you know, it wasn't until the demands of war that we really pushed the boundaries of technology.
It's always that way.
I mean, there are so many, specifically, like, I think with World War One and but even World War Two, there's a lot of like manufacturing innovations that came about because they were manufacturing a large amount of weapons and ammunition and things at great volumes. But it, it's such a weird thing that like so much innovation happens during this
so much
time of war.
It's insane.
Because, you know, on the other side of that, you know, I mentioned the Apollo program.
Yeah.
With the Wernher von Braun guy, because there were tons of scientific and like engineering breakthroughs that happened during that. And so, you know, I think it's not necessarily like specific to war. It's just the country and the government coming together on something. And that's what drives these innovations.
Yeah, I completely agree. But that's planes and how they shaped World War One, World War Two, and today.
Absolutely wild. I mean, clearly massively influential in war. If you're a little dude with a gun on the ground and a giant plane is flying overhead, that's going to be quite the difference.
Quite the difference.
T-Man, thank you for yet another vehicle one. He's clearly got, T-Man's he's got a thing for vehicles, clearly.
I'm here for it. Everyone's got a passion.
Speaking of that, we do need to, I just remembered because T-Man brought it up, we need to do the part two of the car thing and talk about EVs, electric vehicles.
Oh, we do. Yeah, you guys, if you want us to do an episode on electric vehicles, leave us a comment, rating, review, send us an email, and we will do it.
Yeah, make sure to hop onto that Apple Pod, leave that rating review, because it really helps the podcast out.
So does making sure your downloads are on.
So do, yeah, make sure those downloads, make sure you're subscribed so you get those downloads immediately when we put it out.
Immediately. Then you don't have to come search for us. It's just right there for you to listen to.
It's just, it's right there. It's easy.
We're always to make
there.
Your life simple.
That's what we're all about. We're just trying to help you. You know,
simplicity.
We are helping you in this.
Yeah. Right? Oh my gosh.
And yeah, if you don't have Apple Podcasts, but you still want to say hey, you can send us that email at randomtheorypod@gmail.com.
Sounds good. See you later, science pals.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.